Hello.
We had
a banging jam there. I'm sure everybody was happy with it.
Oh yeah, I was digging it.
Well, you know, I have a hectic couple of days, man. Oh my god. No normal intro. You know, I guess I can sing the song. You know what? We could probably get away with a copyright free version of a. Do 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 do
do do do do do.
I can't think of anything.
So we're doing this a little bit out of order. We technical issues came up, so we had to postpone
today. Yes.
Like to thank you for your patience.
Yes. But you know what?
We've been here for 24 hours.
Yeah. Bobby, I admire your dedication.
I'm just happy I can move.
Hey. But you know, we got Dune 2 to talk about. You know, that seems like a fairly popular movie.
Yeah, and I could share about my interesting experience during the film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Before we get to that, we also got the season one of X-Men, the animated series, and yes. I can't believe they made that series woke.
Yeah, how dare they?
Yeah.
How dare they?
It was so anti-woke. And then we'll wrap it up with our final thoughts, finishing off the live-action Netflix Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yes.
You know, I'll get to it when I'll do my total thoughts, because just the release schedule. But I guess, do we want to dive right into Dune?
Yeah, let's ride the worm.
Ooh. Well, I think the Joe Russo, not the Avengers Joe Russo, but the horror movie director Joe Russo, posted a picture of Christopher Walken from Fatboy Slim, with a quote with the quote about, you know, dance without rhythm and you won't attract the worm.
That's great. That's actually really great.
So yeah, I mean, I guess, real quick, if you're a little lost on that, some of the casting additions to this sequel, we get Christopher Walken as the Emperor, Florence Pugh as his daughter. I did not recognize the actor who played Fade Rafa.
It was Elvis. It was Elvis.
Oh, Austin Butler.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I recognized him immediately. I just thought of him.
I didn't.
I just thought of the pompadour on him and went,
Elvis. That was Austin. Yeah, no, I did not catch that at all.
I heard it in his speech too. You didn't catch it when he's like, "Now listen here, man. See them big old mean man sand warming things."
He wasn't
man.
Talking about being a hound dog or anything, so I don't know.
Oh. I missed that part. I didn't detect a shred of Elvis Presley in his voice. I'm kidding. I know that he's like, Butler, trying to shake it.
Okay. Damn. Well, I think he disappeared in the role.
Yeah. I didn't recognize the father, and I had to look it up. Or the uncle.
The
uncle. Batista and Elvis's uncle.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a Stellan Skarsgård, but he was in the first one.
I didn't recognize him. It was giant driving me crazy the whole movie. Yeah. Like, I know who this is.
He's who a bit more recognizable, at least in my opinion.
Not to me.
But yeah, so listen, I'll go ahead and say my piece here. I really like this movie. I think this is the best feature film live action version of Dune so far. But I want to add a little bit here, because as much as I enjoyed this version of Dune, I also kind of missed Denis Villeneuve doing kind of more his own thing and just like, this is a fairly faithful adaptation. It's not 100% accurate, but it's a fairly faithful adaptation of Dune. And I just kind of want some more Denis Villeneuve movies where he just kind of does his own thing and, I don't know, takes weird twists. I want him doing Our Enemy or another Prisoners or, I don't know, Arrival. I don't know.
Wait, with Charlie Sheen?
Those are my quick thoughts, but yeah.
Wait, with Charlie Sheen?
No, the Amy Adams one.
Oh, okay.
You're thinking of The Arrival.
Yeah.
It's a different title than Arrival.
Was that what we're both about aliens?
Yes.
Because I know the Charlie Sheen was, because their knees bent backwards, and that's like a something I'll never forget.
Mm, yeah. They're both decent. Denis Villeneuve is better, but I don't know. I remember enjoying the Charlie Sheen one.
Yeah. For Charlie Sheen is, you know, being Charlie Sheen in it.
Yeah. Bobby, what are your overall thoughts on this?
Well, I'm going to echo something I said when we watched the first one and how I kind of thought it was a bit ridiculous that what David Lynch did in one movie, they have to make two of. And I do see the benefits to it watching the second one. And it honestly made me kind of want to go back and just rewatch the very first one from 84. And then the newer one, and then this one again.
Mm-hmm.
And now I was going in to this just like the first, completely blind to it, not really aware much of Dune or anything in regard to towards it. And this I kind of enjoyed. I did enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I'd be interested to like kind of get more into the series. Enjoyed it. Like it kind of piqued my interest that much.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it had to do with my viewing experience, but
maybe.
Yeah, somehow I managed to luck out and be the only person in the theater to watch this,
which is shocking. So, like, I'll let you get to your thing real fast, but I have a real quick thing to say.
Oh, well,
I was just gonna say my son was gonna go with us to see this movie. And about an hour and a half before going, he just changed his mind, which he's been doing a lot recently. But I have the AMC, you know, like premiere, so I can just cancel the ticket. So I just canceled the ticket. In that hour and a half, his seat was sold.
Jeez.
We had people on both sides of us, myself and my daughter. Yeah. And our theater, it wasn't packed, but it was pretty fucking full. I want to say we went 8:45 on a Saturday night. So it's a busier time, but
now to be fair, I did pick one of the last showings on a Sunday night, but I still wouldn't expect that. And I happened to look because the one before, which was on the bigger screen, and I didn't want to get the big XD one because I think sometimes all I hear is the speakers rattling and not the audio. So I just go to the standard definition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's worse when like I've trained my ears to hear like the full everything in it. And if I just pick that up and I know what that is, it's like, it kind of takes me out of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I did enjoy this. I want to make that absolutely clear. I still think it's funny that David Lynch just needed one movie to do this.
Well, I will say
this, like, did it better.
I am familiar with the book, and the David Lynch one, you know, it's faithful as well, but it's rushed.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, and
I
definitely feel like here you get a better feel of the characters.
Yeah, so with viewing it completely solo, that was not the first time that's ever happened to me in the theater, but I actually got... I was invested in it. I was paying the utmost attention. I was captivated. It was nice. It was lovely. Until he rode that sandworm and they just completely forgot about me and cut the audio out entirely.
Yeah.
So just dead silence. And I'm watching this
scene. I
think
that's more of a theater issue.
That is a theater issue. The only time that's happened. And not that I would expect them to apologize for that or anything.
But oh, they didn't apologize?
No, like I was walking to the front door and their security guard came in because they had like an off-duty cop as a security guard. He had like a vest and a gun and whatever. But I was like, hey, is this like a quiet part in the movie or did they kill the audio? Yeah, yeah. And he's like, obviously going to check the theater. And it's like, no, dude, I'm the only one in here. Like, what the hell? Yeah. What did you guys forget about me? So other than that and missing a little bit of it, I did take that opportunity to pee, though. Yeah. Really, even when I came back, the audio really wasn't back on.
Okay.
So, like, I missed what the guy who was calling him a prophet first said. I got to read it. And a little early bit of the next scene. But then audio was back on and everything was good. First time I've ever had like a little what the hell experience at that theater. And I go there for like all the movies we watch for the show.
So they didn't like apologize and give you a refund? I'd kind of expect something.
No. I would have taken a blame. I'm gonna mention it the next time I'm there. Just go to an earlier showing and just ask as the manager around. No big deal. Just as the manager around.
That seems reasonable.
Yeah, and just be like, hey, I just want to let you know that this happened. And it's just like, even if you sell one ticket, which I get it's not a full house. I get it. And easily to forget about, but maybe have some indicator going, hey, we have at least one person here who's paid their money.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, okay, you only sold one ticket, so I understand it's not a priority. But if you're going to do the showing and not cancel it, then do the showing.
Do the showing. If you're going to cancel it, refund me my money.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. Like, it really seems like, you know, you hear about stories about people not liking a movie and demanding a refund. And for me, that's like, well, if you want a refund, I think you should approach the studio.
I have worked in a theater before.
Yeah.
And that happens more than you would think.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
for me, it's like, don't ask 100%. The theater for money back. Ask the studio.
The most we could do is refund their concessions.
Mm-hmm. Now the only time I would ask for a refund from the movie theater is something like that, where it's a technical issue on their end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like if it went out and didn't come back on, yeah, I would have absolutely, hey, the hell.
Yeah.
Can you put the movie back on and can I get my money back? Like, that's just, it was bogus, but but I genuinely did enjoy this though.
Yeah. No, like, even though, like, I was saying, hey, I would like him to do more stuff. Cause one thing I thought was interesting is even though this kind of concludes the entire story from the first Dune, it does feel like they're leading into the sequel, like more than I expected.
Yeah.
Like he beats the Emperor here, but then it's like, but Paul has more to do. He has to, you know, go throughout the universe or whatever. And it's like, oh, it really felt led until the sequel. And I'm like, okay. I love Denis Villeneuve. He's one of the best working directors right now, in my opinion, but I would like him to do something not Dune next. I don't even want to say I dislike either of these movies because I thought they were, I think this is my favorite version of Dune. You know, but I thought it was better than David Lynch. Than the sci-fi one, which it's so weird.
We don't talk about that one, from what I've understood.
Well,
we don't
David Lynch one rushes through a lot of the story, and that's kind of the biggest issue because you don't get a great feel for the characters. Whereas the sci-fi one actually goes through the story and the characters, it does a decent job. But those visuals.
Are they any better than the Picard movie? Are they any better than that Picard fight?
Picard fight? Which
one? Yeah, when he's fighting Patrick Stewart and the David Lynch one.
Oh.
And they got the geometric shields.
No, those visuals are so much better than anything in the sci-fi movie.
Okay.
I will take that 80s animated shield over anything in that sci-fi movie visual wise. I want to stress, like, they do a decent job with the characters in that, but yeah, you gotta suspend a lot of disbelief with the in fact, hold on. That's right. I don't know why I was thinking it was James McAvoy as Paul in that, but no, it was Alec Newman. James McAvoy is involved in that series at some point, though. I'm not sure when, but yeah.
Well, please tell me he plays the Sting part.
No. Well, yeah, I mean, that is worth talking about because that is one of the things that is changed here. Because something I didn't realize until kind of recently, until DJ brought up, was how Frank Herbert, the original writer of this, very homophobic dude. And that's, you know, Harkonnen was kind of written, you know, as like the one gay representative in the story. Not portrayed well. And they really, like, in this version, they really, like, they steer hard away from any gay implication with Harkonnen, which is probably the best. Because there are issues with Frank Herbert. Mainly the big thing that pissed me off is that he disowned his gay son, and that's
shitty,
really fucking shitty of him. Yes, and then you know, Frank Herbert's also been dead quite a while too. I think he died back in the 80s. He's not with us for a while. So, you know, the opportunity to take his stories, which are largely pretty fucking good, and, you know, just kind of get rid of those aspects because they aren't really vital. And, you know, that really feels like kind of what Denis Villeneuve was shooting for with this version. I think he largely pulls it off. Overall, I think this is a very good movie. The visuals here are amazing. Like, the unexpected, just black and white stuff going on in that arena scene was, unexpected. Redundant. The unexpected. But I love the way it looked. Like, it just worked. You know, just kind of showing the simplicity of just the barbarism of just the arena. And it's like, okay, I'm down.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed that. I wasn't a fan of a lot of the close-up fight scenes. I kind of thought there was just way too many cuts.
Yeah.
But that's a preference for me. That's my preference.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like there was something I watched recently that had a lot of that issues. Oh, I think it was probably Avatar, the live-action Avatar, did that bit, too.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we're not there yet.
No.
But yeah, this is overall just a really good movie. Yeah.
And you know what? I actually kind of put up with Timothy Chalamet in this one, and I am not a fan.
You see, I think he is fine. I don't think he's amazing.
Very wooden. I don't think he's wooden. I think he's wooden. But wow, there was enough other actors that it just, I kind of was like, oh yeah, that's right. He's in this. That's right.
Well, I was actually going to add, one of the things I noticed also is that it felt like, maybe I'm misremembering, it felt like Lady Jessica's role was diminished a bit in this movie. Because I remember, and maybe it's just because I'm looking at the
her
story
being
overall,
a child. Her actually being a living 5-year-old child?
Oh, no, that I'm not speaking of that. But yeah, no, Lady Jessica's his mom.
That's right.
But yeah, you are correct. So Anya Taylor-Joy plays his sister, and you only get one quick vision of her. She is never born in this one, which is one of the things that kind of feels like it's leading towards another sequel, even though this one mostly covers and finishes the first book.
Even though there's that scene where she just like the sister goes into the council, like I was kind of like, oh man, we don't get a lot of deep conversation telepathy in this one like we did the original. And I was enjoying that one.
I mean, the original, the original story goes over a lot more time. And then the David Lynch one does as well. It like speed runs a lot of that time though. But you know, you get this there's supposed to be at least quite a few years at Paul's with the Desert People. And here it feels like maybe a year.
A month?
Oh, yeah.
A month at best.
It doesn't feel that short, but like maybe he's there a year. Maybe. Yeah. 6 months maybe. To a year. No. It can't be a year because she hasn't given birth yet. So it's been like 6 months with the Fremen.
Yeah.
She's fairly pregnant at the end, but like that's it.
She's all kinds of fucking pregnant at the end.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, not nearly as long with the Fremen. So I guess that's a variation from the book as well.
I did like when like them getting the water of life from the baby worm. That scene was actually kind of cool.
Yeah. I don't remember anything like that from the books or the original movie, but that was
cool.
Wild.
Yeah. And also just the let her try, and it's like, oh yeah, they do that.
Oh yeah, that the commanding voice thing that the God, what do they call it? The Bene Gesserit do.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that until that first one. I was like, oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. How they make you do shit. No, don't.
Even though having the entire theater to myself, I have to give myself, I gotta pat myself on the back for this. I did not even riff aloud. I was still respectful as if it was a full theater.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the only other time I've had a theater to myself was for Tusk. That one I wasn't.
Well,
I was vocal about that one.
Well, Tusk is so weird because, like, I remember the first time I watched it, like the first half, I'm like, wow, this seems like a totally decent, like almost like a dramatic Kevin Smith movie.
It's more like, okay, Kev. Down. Okay, Kev. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he becomes a walrus and you're like, oh shit.
And then shit just goes south and be what the fuck am I
that's
watching?
Right. I remember the exact moment it changes when Johnny Depp pops up on screen. And that's when it's like, oh, fuck, what movie am I watching?
It's going, is he like a caricature? Or...
yeah.
What?
But you know what? Dune Part 2, way better than Tusk.
Way better than Tusk. So good you can enjoy it in a theater by yourself.
And even though I am not a fan of Tusk, and a lot of stuff Kevin Smith's done recently, excluding Clerks 3, all the respect in the world to Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
He seems like a cool dude.
Yeah. Good or bad. Even when he's playing a hyperized version of himself that's a dick.
Yeah. Let's see. Anything you want to add, or you want to dive into X-Men Season 1?
Let's dive into X-Men Season 1.
All right, so I grew up on this series, and I remember being excited to watch it every Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah.
One thing that threw me off, and I think it got better as the series went by, either I got more used to it, but I think it got better. The first few episodes, that animation is
a little choppy.
Rough. Yeah,
a little choppy.
Very choppy.
You noticed that too?
And I feel like it did get better as it went on. I feel like towards the end it wasn't as bad. Yeah.
I there's a lot about this that I remember, but do not remember how.
Yeah.
But okay, like I remember Beast being in prison.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember what happened or how he was in prison or why he was in prison. Just that he was in prison and was willingly serving out his time.
Yeah.
Because I remember that one going like, are you kidding me? Even when he bent the bars to let Gambit out, like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Tank. Like, come on.
He's counting on human beings to do the right thing. Fucking sucker. One thing, and I think this is probably one of the first series I remember that did this. And it's a comic book story, so it undoes it later. But I will say, this series has some balls killing off Morph in the second episode, too.
Killing.
Yeah. Well, first season killing. It is reversed later. It's a comic book story. But like, yeah, like essentially they're getting attacked by the Sentinels. You know.
Yeah, they got a lot of balls killing a main character that quickly.
Yeah, yeah. He was set up as a main character, and then Wolverine's like, I need to go back for Morph and Beast. And then they're like, Beast has been captured, he's fine. And then Wolverine's like, well, what about Morph? And just like silence. It's like, oh shit, they're actually killing him. Okay, I'm doing air quotes about my camera on. It's not very useful, but I will go ahead and also say, even though animation issues aside, this season one had some pretty good stories, I thought, overall. I can agreed. See why I was into it. Yeah.
Agreed.
God, I didn't even remember how many, blunt, like, a lot of the stories I really remember are from season one. I didn't even realize, like, pretty much at the end, it's Days of Future Past. It's like, wow.
Yeah, I kind of forgot all about that, too. And, like, yeah. I remember Bishop, but I never understood how he got there.
Yeah.
Whoa. And, like there was a lot that I had kind of forgotten since it had been almost, like, a while since I'd watched this.
It's probably been around 10 years for me, and I was probably spotty when I was watching it last time because it was mainly my daughter who was watching it.
Yeah.
My son never got into this series, so... I didn't watch it with him when he was younger. And damn it, I tried to. where's the episode list? But yeah, there it is, episode guide. But yeah, we begin with the two-parter Night of the Sentinels, and then you got the kind of the Magneto two-parter, but that's the only thing I don't remember.
You mean that one where Xavier made him relive the Holocaust?
Yeah. That's the other thing I don't remember.
I don't remember that.
Well, they don't call it the Holocaust here. They're treating it like almost like it's some different war.
But no, it's the Holocaust.
Well, yeah, no, famously it is. Yeah. I feel like maybe they're trying to de-age Magneto and Professor X, maybe. I don't know. I wasn't sure why they weren't being... Like, they were being really vague about, like, what the war was and stuff like that. And it was kind of like, the war was kind of a big deal, guys. I think most kids would know what World War II is. I'm not saying we have to get detailed or anything like that, but we can...
No, no, not at all.
Call it World War II. But, yeah, pretty much every episode was a cliffhanger. Kind of one after the other. Because you get the two-parter with Magneto, and then we get the Morlock thing, and then, the Cold Vengeance is kind of like Wolverine and Sabretooth, and there's like a B-plot where Gambit, Jubilee, and Storm are going to go to Genosha to check out the place that's friendly to mutants, and then and they're instantly enslaved.
They end up meeting their rogues gallery in one episode. And work together with them.
Yes, yes. To save themselves. And then they get home and the X-Mansion is destroyed. And it turns out Juggernaut did it. But they think it's Colossus because they encounter Colossus first. They did some weird stuff with time, too. Because, like, they encounter Colossus and they hear, like, a news report of some big guy at a bank. So they rush over to the bank and they're arresting Colossus. And it's like, wait. How'd he get there first?
Yeah.
What? Does he have a teleporter? I'm confused. But then immediately after the Juggernaut story, it's the Cure, which is leading into the Apocalypse stuff and the Archangel stuff. And then it's Days of Future Past.
I don't remember Archangel being a bad guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he's one of the horsemen for sure. But then, yeah. And then, you know, we got Days of Future Past and then the cliffhanger of Days of Future Past is essentially they go to stop the assassination of Senator Kelly, and they are successful, but the future still ends up all like apocalypse, you know, everybody's dead shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads into the last episode where the X-Men are trying to figure out who the big bad is, and it all ends up being the super Sentinel Master Mold, you know, comic book stuff.
Yeah.
I
remember that thing. And yeah. I remember being like, as a kid, just, oh, that's so scary. But now I just couldn't help but laugh at it.
Well, no, it's definitely one of those things where it's like, it was a fine for like a little like season finale. But at the same time, yeah. I felt like they had done so many like major stories leading up to that. That like when we got to that final episode, it's like it's fine, but it's like any one of the other stories they had done throughout this season would have been better as a final story.
Yeah, it's just kind of really like that.
Yeah. It's like, okay, big monster, big robot monster, whatever. Like, you know, we had already had Apocalypse and the Four Horsemen. We'd done Days of Future Past. Juggernaut would have been better to.
We've already introduced Cable and Bishop. Like,
yes, so many time traveling dudes. I mean, with the exception of the Morlock thing, like, I don't really feel like it.
And the street urchins.
Yeah. but yeah, I will say it was fun, like diving back into this. I'm trying to remember, like, I feel like maybe towards the Apocalypse stuff is when I really started noticing the animation seemed to smoother. Like, the animation I never thought was really amazing. Like, the designs, I think, are overall decent for the characters, but, like, there's a cheapness to the animation that never gets completely resolved, but it's definitely better than it was in the first few episodes. I do think mainly what carries a lot of this for me is just they're decently written episodes. Totally woke, by the way.
The final decision though, that led into Sinister, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yeah. We heard Sinister's voice at the end of that.
Yeah.
Which I mean, Mr. Sinister is a great villain, but we've already had Apocalypse. So, but yeah, I know there's some big ones. Like, I remember they're doing Phoenix Saga and Dark Phoenix Saga, so I'm sure those are coming up.
Yeah, I peeked ahead at the future stuff coming up, because I know at some point there was a crossover, and it was supposed to be the launching point for a few other Marvel properties, but they got canceled in that season. And I think one was like Captain America, and they were going to try and rejuvenate Iron Man.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure there is a Captain America story.
Well, there is. There is. I peeked ahead and I saw Cap there, and I'm like, oh, it's so tempting to watch it, but I know if I jump in, there'll be like so much that I have missed.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, all the stories are leading into each other. For a kid's show, that's kind of surprising too.
It's kind of super awesome. Hey, yeah.
Yeah, I'm down for it. I mean, it probably partially explains why I was so excited to catch a new episode every Saturday morning. Because, what's going to happen next?
Because I've rewatched Batman the Animated Series. And that one rarely did that. That's kind of what I think made X-Men just so awesome.
Well, I will say I thought the Batman Animated Series did a better job with the animation.
Those first few are a little rocky like this, but. It quickly gets fixed. Sometimes people's color, their eyes are the same as their skin, and it's kind of what the fuck.
Yeah, that'll throw you off. But yeah, okay. So Phoenix Saga is season 3. I remember I think Phoenix Saga, if I remember, that was like after school when they were doing those episodes. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to check those out.
Yeah, and let's see here. Time Fugitives. That's part two. That's season two.
Yeah.
Time Fugitives part one and two.
But yeah, this was good. And I think, like I said, well, I think mainly carries it is we got a solid voice cast and well written episodes. You know, that'll keep you engaged episode to episode.
Well, season 3, we get Nightcrawler.
If we don't get
season 3,
I'm surprised number of characters we got in season 1. We got Cable, Bishop, Colossus,
Sabretooth.
Yeah, Sabretooth, Magneto, Mystique.
Mystique, yeah.
This series is so woke. There's a character that's a woman, but she pretends to be a man using male pronouns. So woke.
Yeah, we do get the Dark Phoenix Saga. Oh yeah, it's a four-parter, all in season 3.
Oh yeah, and before that it's regular Phoenix Saga for five-parter,
and that's in season 2, right?
No, I think that's season 3 as well.
Oh.
Maybe I'm misremembering. It does seem familiar. There's like a season where like Professor X and Magneto are in the Savage Land for like the entire season. That's like the ongoing story. Kind of like Beast being in prison for season one is the main story, is kind of like the ongoing thing in season one. Which means we don't get too much Beast in season one, which is a little missed, but.
Yeah, I do still like Beast. Definitely one of my favorite characters. Beast has always
been one of my favorites. The contrast between, you know, just the fact that he's a beast and his intelligence, I always appreciate that. And the fact that his mutant power literally makes him dumber is always kind of a cool aspect of him. It's like, how smart would you be without your mutant power? Holy shit. Yeah, but it was fun returning to this. I enjoyed this. We'll see how the other seasons go. But,
Jean Grey is kind of worthless in this, in the first season.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, like Rogue actually gets a lot to do in this season.
Rogue carries the team.
Yeah, Rogue is a major, major character.
Like, there was one I was watching, and I was like, Wolverine. I was like, he was like, the whole team's doing so. Oh, wait, don't worry, guys. Gene's here. It's cool.
Yeah. Gene's that is here. True. Like, Gene, I felt like her role was to date Cyclops.
We also got the meme in this, too, in season one.
Holding
the picture. It was my,
I know that meme.
I know that.
Yeah, Gene she hates Cyclops, and like she has like one of the most powerful. Like she's a telekinetic; she can move anything she wants with her mind, and she comes off as kind of worthless a lot.
Like I was just gonna like wait, like come on, how are they gonna build the Phoenix around her? Like I mean, for God's sakes, Xavier flew the fucking Blackbird.
Yeah, I mean, you know how Magneto can control all metal objects? Well, Jean. You can do the same thing, except you aren't limited to metal.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Maybe we'll get more of her in season two. Like her.
I figure we will. But yeah, that was a good point. Storm gets a fair amount to do as well. It's like, I feel like here, like the main characters we get focused on are mainly like Rogue, Wolverine, and Gambit.
Yeah.
But we get plenty of Cyclops and Storm.
We started with Jubilee, and I thought we'd get a little bit more with her perspective, but no.
Yeah, I'd probably put Jubilee along with Cyclops and Storm as the second tier. And I feel like we get as much Beast as we do Jean Grey, but Beast is in jail for a lot of the season. There's a reason why we aren't getting a lot of Beast. Jean's just not doing anything. Yeah.
And always in that costume.
Yeah, just chilling.
I think she was only out of it once, and it was the Street Urchin episode.
Yes.
That was the only time we actually got her and Scott alone, but still, that was it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was after that they decided to get married. Right. But yeah, enjoying this.
I am, but I did notice that this season.
I didn't even think about that, but that is 100% accurate. Anything you want to add before we go on to Avatar?
No.
All right. So we talked about the first half of Avatar: The Last Airbender, live action Netflix version, and now we've seen the whole season. And I know last week my vote was kind of I'm not really recommending it, but it's close. My new vote at this point would be I kind of recommend it, but it's tentative. It's borderline. And I don't know, like mainly if you're a fan of the original. This doesn't work at all as a replacement, in my opinion.
But, does. It plays the hits.
Yeah.
It definitely plays the hits. It took a few liberties in the end. Some of
and
which
I largely like the liberties it takes.
Yeah, I'm cool with. Cool with. They're kind of. They definitely teased another season.
Oh yeah. I mean, this. If you've seen season one of the show, this is broadly the same story. It's just like the M. Night Shyamalan movie. Kind of the same
only
story.
Better.
Well, this is
better.
This is not as good as the animated series, but vastly improved the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
I will say that the princess's death hit a little harder.
Yes. Yes, it did.
And I really felt horrible for Sokka at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
well, the other thing is
the actor who's playing Sokka is great. So
yeah, I feel like they're willing to go a bit darker with this version, which is something mm-hmm. I do appreciate. Like, we don't see Zuko getting burned, but we see more of that battle between him and his father. And, you know, we could see the father's face when he's burning him. It's like,
joy,
this is fucked up. Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of still think Ira is the man.
Oh, yeah. No. And the stuff they've done with Iroh and Zuko in this live action version, I love. I have it here. Paul Sun Hong Lee. I think I brought him up last week. He's the guy who plays Uncle Iroh.
Yeah.
He is not doing the same thing as Mako, which is 100% what he shouldn't be doing the same thing as Mako. But what he is doing, I think, is fantastic. I'm loving this character just as much.
How about him when he saved his nephew from that lieutenant? Like, yeah. I knew it was coming, but I'm like, fucking eviscerate him. Like,
yeah,
fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
You think those guys have the gall to attack you?
Mm-hmm.
They're too scared.
No, he does come off a bit more as a badass here. Like, I feel like in the animated series, he was a badass, but like, it would almost be surprising, and that's probably what they were shooting for. Here, there's just more of a badass edge to him, which it works as well.
I believe he conquered cities.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that.
I think by showing Ozai and Azula in this season, they kind of gave them little stories. We kind of learned Azula kind of going into lightning bending a bit, kind of getting a bit more where she ended up at the end of season one. I think they do a good job of adding them to this season and not really changing too much of where they're at for the beginning of the second season.
Mm-hmm.
It's the effects are spotty. The costuming gets spotty as well. This is not perfect as well.
Aang still went full kaiju. He still went full kaiju.
He did go full kaiju, and that was pretty badass.
Fucking
I
awesome.
Was down for that. Yeah. Going full kaiju is cooler than whatever the fuck he did in the M. Night Shyamalan movie, where he interpretive danced his way through the enemies. It's like
he made random movements, thus not to attract worms.
Wrong movie.
Oh, that's right. It must have been the isolation.
You're thinking of Tremors.
That's right. I was literally in the theater when you sent that.
Well, come on, the crossover we all need.
Okay, maybe I was a well-behaved patron, except for that moment. I did laugh out loud at that.
But yeah, I think this is kind of a good companion series so far, but you know, I'm not thrilled by it, you know.
Like, I'm not overly wowed, but like, I would say that if you want to get somebody into the series and they're not actually into anime or have like I don't want to watch a kid's show, this might be a bit more palatable for them.
And I can understand the hesitation, because I think that's a big reason why I didn't watch the animated series sooner. And I really need to give animated stuff.
That's
I need to give animated stuff more of a chance, because there's some good stuff. And like, actually forcing myself to sit down and watch this the animated version was worth it because it's a great fucking series.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
I'm excited to catch Legend of Korra whenever we get around to that at this point.
Yeah, when we can.
Yeah. But yeah, this is, I think Netflix does all right with this version.
It's better than Adam Sandler starring in it.
Oh, God. Why?
Oh, because you know that he'd cast Rob Schneider as Appa. Oh, just picture it, that big old face.
That would be awful.
Oh, I kid, but seriously though.
Yeah.
No, this was good, and it could be a little bit more palatable. Is anything gonna top the original though? No.
No.
It won't.
It's tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's not to say the original is flawless, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and absolutely.
The rumors of the misogyny being removed from this series.
Fuck no.
Yeah, no. So like maybe with the Sokka character, but like the Water Tribe misogyny, very much still there.
Like bluntly.
Yeah, no, I feel it's handled differently. Like before it was handled kind of like in the animated series it's handled kind of like the guy is just unwilling to teach women. And here mm-hmm. it's handled a bit more like it's a cultural thing. Which I would argue, I can make an argument that that's more of an effective argument to be like, you know.
It for a storytelling arc, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And to have character development and growth with that character, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So the removal of that is, it's there. It is flat out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, you brought up how the Princess Yue and Sokka, they do a good job, I think, with those two. And you do feel when she's gone. Mikhail's, yeah. They did improve the romance with Sokka.
They did.
That's the thing. Like, the animated series, better. I want to make that absolutely clear. The animated series is better. There's no comparison. This one does a couple aspects, I think, better. And there's a couple of things they throw in there where I'm like, okay, cool. I will say, I feel like towards the end of the series, they were getting better with Katara, but I definitely feel like she's still the weakest of the characters they brought back so far.
I think they're going to really push for her if they do the next season.
Yeah,
because I remember that feeling that way about her at the end of the first season, the first time I watched our first watch through, kind of going, she interests me. I just wish they had more for her to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, eventually she'll start bloodbending people and you'll start getting freaked out by her.
We're on series, man. That's Gen V.
No, that she Katara does that too. Yeah,
I know.
She's although the one Gen not to be v, fucked the with. Bloodbending in Gen V. Holy shit!
Holy
damn! Fuck. Hey, this live action version does get a bit darker, so maybe.
Maybe.
I don't think they'll go quite that far.
I don't think they'll go that hard.
It is noteworthy how people do die in this version.
I
feel like really the animated series is definitely going for PG. This is definitely going for PG-13.
Yeah, people die. And like they kind of show slashes and like blades going through people. So it's just kind of okay. Like,
yeah, and people getting burned to death. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, that is noteworthy. But again, it's like, I think this is good enough. It could definitely be better, but okay. Anything you want to add, Bobby?
No.
All right. Let me dig up what's on the agenda for next week here.
We also got some news. You and I.
Oh, yeah. Well, we can talk about that right now. Horror Hound. Yeah.
Horror Hound Weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We will be covering that.
Yeah. So we're going to do what we can interview wise, but we're going to have a bunch of photos.
Yeah.
Bunch of cool stuff. There is a few panels that we're going to, that I'm going to try and find a spot with a wall and an outlet and get at least all of it recorded.
We're going to have outlets for your equipment.
I have one, but I also have batteries.
Okay. I was about to say, and when I'm there, both. I almost always go on it, batteries.
And I'm going
to
bring both. Like
a dead hour, I will find a socket and plug in.
Yeah. I mean, and if anything, we'll talk that more later. But
yeah,
there's plenty of cool stuff. There is, I don't know how late you're going to stay Saturday night, but there is a after party with live music.
I will let my daughter will be with us. So it's kind of going to be her call. I know. I think she'll probably be interested in the film festival aspect. So,
oh yeah.
Cause there's a film festival aspect to that, which Comic Expo doesn't have. So I think that's kind of cool.
If you go to the Horror Hound website, she could watch trailers. Mm-hmm. They have all the trailers up right now.
That is awesome.
There's some pretty cool ones. And when I went a few years ago, I saw a great one that they've changed the name of it, but I think it's on Amazon now. But it was really good. And I wasn't like expecting much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a film festival at a horror con. I knew what I was walking into, and I kind of figured I might get something that was like not like highest quality made, but it was good. Like I was thoroughly impressed.
Well, it's one of those things with horror, you never know quite what you're going to get. You could get just something cheap, but, you know, kind of people playing around, you know, figuring out what to do. And then you could also get some high concept, really well thought out, cool stuff.
But you're also going to get to see a pretty cool stuff from us. We both splurged a little, and we're going to have some pretty cool uploads.
Mm-hmm. Well,
we're both going to meet Jeffrey Combs, not at the same time.
Yes,
but we're both meeting him.
You know what? I hopefully he has some Star Trek stuff there because he's done too much with Star Trek to not appreciate.
You better bring some just in case.
Yeah, I want to weigh you in. God damn it!
But there is also a Reanimator panel that Friday that I'm going to try and that's definitely something I'm going to be recording all of.
So. Reanimator has always been one of those movies on my to watch list, and I've
really?
Never
so you have never it. Seen it.
Yes.
Oh man,
that's why I was like, "Hey, let's add it next week."
That is probably one of my favorite horror movies of all time. Like,
it looks cool, and I am a sucker for anything with Jeffrey Combs. Like, it's one of those things where it's like Jeffrey Combs is in it. I'll check it out.
Oh, and it's like he's young, so young in this, but he has got that like darkness that he can go, you know, how he can just go there. And yes.
Yeah. So
it's good. It's good. It is just one of my personal favorite movies of all time. I fucking love that movie.
But yeah, next week we got Reanimator, and then in the same vein, Kung Fu Panda 4, which rewatching those, I was like, oh man, I feel like this is a franchise that could be better, but it really isn't.
they're gonna hump
it's
into
not
the
terrible,
ground.
But
they're gonna Jurassic World it.
Yeah. And then, but we got X-Men season 2.
Mm-hmm.
That should be fun. I'm not gonna lie. I'm mainly excited to talk about Reanimator next week because I've never seen it, and I'm
excited for you to watch it.
I'm excited to watch it too. I think my daughter will be down for it too, so I think that'll be fun. If you're wondering, the Reanimator's next week, but we will be almost certainly doing some coverage or talk about Horror Hound on the 25th. Because on the 18th, myself and George will be covering Ministry, Gary Numan, and Frontline Assembly. God, that's a hell of an album ranking, too. We're not doing all of them, but holy shit.
Going through
the parts of the discography we picked.
My favorite one is Cars. Okay, that's my contribution to it.
Cars is awesome. So.
like Randy Newman, right? You know, yeah, Short People.
My pick. Gary, yeah. Gary, you had it right with Cars.
Oh, wait, I thought that's the same guy.
No,
you know, short people got no reason. No.
This guy does not love L.A.
And they don't do it for the boys.
No.
Oh.
But that would be awesome. And I will go ahead and show a little favoritism here. I wish it was. It's a ministry headlining show, and I wish it was a Gary Newman headlining show.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
That is surprising.
It's like I guess maybe like
the ministry's okay. They're all right. Yeah.
They were huge, especially if Jesus Built My Hot Rod. But I mean, I don't think they have anything as big as Cars. I mean, I heard Cars earlier today at work.
In Cars.
Yes.
In Cars.
In and trucks. He's actually one of those guys where like he's done like 25 albums and they're all a bit different and they're all interesting. And Ministry, as much as I like Ministry, not all their albums are as different as they should be. But yeah, that'll be on the 18th. Next week, Kung Fu Panda 4, Reanimator, and X-Men Season 2, though. We got a couple of weeks of excitement coming up.
We got some fun stuff happening.
Yes. We'll have to see what we can get done. Because on Horror Hound, there's also Ghostbusters Frozen Empire and Roadhouse 2024.
Yeah, we're going to have to figure out how we're going to do that.
Yeah, well, we'll
that's going to be a busy week.
Out. Yeah, it'll be busy. I think I can get most of X-Men watched before then, but yeah.
Oh, I can get X-Men watched during the downtime, like before and after the con.
Well, if there's anything like the Comic Expo, I guess there is downtime, but you kind of have to force it. There's not a whole lot of real downtime.
Well, yeah, they're still uploading, like updating the schedule and everything. So anything could happen between now until then. Well, I say that because I have yet to see a lineup for the Saturday night after party. And that usually doesn't come out until like a week before.
Okay.
There's also, where is it? Oh, yeah, if we want to stay till 3 p.m. on Sunday, we can get a Halloween Ends. So you could sit with the Corey Crawford from Halloween Ends, the surrogate Michael Myers.
Yeah.
I liked it. I don't care.
I thought Halloween Ends was the better version of Friday the 13th Part 5.
Okay, fair. But the year I went, there was a point when James Jude Courtney, like the guy who plays Michael,
yeah,
we walked past each other in the hallway. That motherfucker's so big.
He would have to be to play Michael.
I mean, I thought of him just in the full like outfit, you know, the jumpsuit, mm-hmm. and the mask. Yeah, I'd be fucking running.
Yeah,
like I'd be out of there pushing people down out of my way.
So next couple weeks we got some exciting stuff. Oh, and quick announcement: this isn't the only one of my streams that's going to get delayed. Although this is a last minute delay. This Thursday I'm not going to be able to stream. However, I'm going to do the regular Thursday stream. I'm going to do it Saturday at the regular time, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So no stream Thursday, but stream Saturday. And then we do have a regular initiative stream tomorrow. But yeah, those are the big announcements. Exciting couple weeks for the podcast.
Yes, I'm looking forward to Horror Hound.
We'll talk about it. But yeah, it's my first Horror Hound, so I'll be interested to check out this festival. And it's at a much smaller venue than I'm used to. So
they actually renovated the place.
Did they?
It was cramped it was cramped when I was there. And I guess they added a whole new wing to it, which is nice because...
Oh, you know, well, that would make it better.
Like, they must have done space, it
fairly quickly, yeah.
Well, they were under construction when I was there. Yeah. We'll talk in a minute.
Yeah. Everyone, party on. Be excellent to each other.